We're really happy to have on board here tonight Dr. Mark Seeley, who is the Extension Climatologist and Professor in the Department of Soil, Water, and Climate at the University of Minnesota. He also is the author of Minnesota Weather Almanac, and I know anybody who listens to public radio has heard Dr. Mark Seeley. Always great to have him here on the Roadhouse. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you very much, Buck. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You know, the first thing I know I asked you this last time, but I thought I'd do it again. And you are both a climatologist and meteorologist. What does that
mean?
That's
right. I'm plagued to be both. That's right. I'm trained to be a forecaster, that is, a meteorologist concerned with what it's like today, but more pertinently, what's it going to be like tonight or tomorrow? And so we use the measurements made by the National Weather Service to put into models that forecast the weather for us. And then, of course, the weather historian part of me, or the climatology part of me, is today in the context of the past. So how does today, for example, the foggy day you've had in Grand Marais today for March 23rd, how does that fit in the context of your past weather on March 23rd?
Well, it seems like your role as climatologist is more in the forefront with what's been happening around the world the last X amount of years. I know in Cook County here, when we talked about climate change 20 years ago, it seemed subtle here.
Yes.
But now this spring, we have no snow. We haven't had for some time, really. We have lakes that are open already. This is March. We have hummingbirds that are halfway up Wisconsin, and traditionally, we don't. The earliest our local birder, Molly Hoffman, was aware of them being here was May 7th.
Wow.
There's a lot of things happening. Is this year even weirder than normal?
Oh, yes.
If there is a normal.
The extent of the anomalous weather we're having is absolutely remarkable, Buck. It's our phenology, which is what you were alluding to, you know, the seasonality of all of these features of the natural environment, be it the birds or the insects or the buds and flowers on the vegetation or the ice off the lakes or whatever. Anyway, all of these phenological happenings by our records are at least 3 or 4 weeks early. And we've had such a run of warmth, we're going to blow the old record warmth of March 1910 out of the record book. You know, I would have guessed 10 or 20 years ago that the record of March of 1910 in Minnesota, one of the most anomalous months we've ever had in history, was an untouchable climate record. But it looks like we're going to break it this month.
This winter, of course, we had no snow here. We had really no cold except for maybe a week, and it wasn't that cold. And yet Alaska had just, it seemed like, record snowfalls. They had very cold temps. I believe Fairbanks had 62 below about a week ago or so.
Right.
And up the coast of British Columbia and in Canada, they had snow. Out west in Colorado, Utah, no snow to speak of. Is there a El Nino or El Nina? I don't know that many of these events. Is there something that we can point to for this year?
No, in fact, using the El Nino or La Nina tool, which is a measure of what happens to sea surface temperature in the equatorial Pacific Ocean, has historically, Buck, been a pretty good tool for us because it has correlated with certain anomalous weather patterns in the winter season. All of those are tossed out the window this year. The historical correlations have not played out. And so we have seen the behavior of the climate this winter. In fact, if anything, it's behaved the opposite of the way La Nina would have indicated. And that's been a real head-scratcher. That's got the weather community really wondering, well, what the heck is going on?
It seems that these events, and I saw a map, I'm sure you're probably familiar with, of the U.S. from 2011, where they had put in red all of the highs or record events weather-wise, and it was just plastered with them.
Yeah, we've been setting a number of records we've set is just prolific. You're right.
It is, as I mentioned, it seemed that climate change used to be more subtle here, and one would look at the poles to look at more dramatic events.
Yeah.
These things seem to be accelerating. Is this something that we're going to continue to have to be used to, more and more bizarre weather?
Well, I think we're going to settle down. I mean, I don't think we're going to be caught in any kind of a permanent anomaly, but the variability, that's one thing we talk about in climate statistics that's rather important, is there's kind of a waxing and waning of the variability about our central tendencies, our central measurements of snowfall, precipitation, temperature. And right now, we're in a period where the variability is magnified. And so when we do depart away from the central tendencies in our climate, we depart dramatically away. And that seems to be what we're a pattern that we're getting into lately. You know, this month we've had temperature departures that are 35 and 40 degrees warmer than normal around the state. That's just absolutely remarkable. That only occurs a handful of times per century.
Wow. We're kind of getting used to highs, higher temperatures than we're seeing for highs, but it seems like the lows are also getting higher. Is that more of a problem?
Yes. In fact, when the National Weather Service released the new normals this last year, because we changed our averaging period for describing the climate of Minnesota, we no longer use 1971 to the year 2000. Now our averages are computed from 1981 to 2010. And when we move the period forward in time, we've noticed that the average minimum temperatures have changed more dramatically than the average maximum temperatures. So you're spot on with that observation. Our minimum temperatures have generally been warming more dramatically than our maximum temperatures.
You know, my co-host here, Bob Carter, and I were talking just before we dialed your number about maple syrup. Now, that's one thing that's been a problem this spring, is that we're not getting cold enough at night to make that happen.
That's right. The maple sap run is very dependent on daily temperature fluctuations, particularly fluctuations above and below the freezing mark. But we've been staying so persistently high that we haven't been able, or at least by all reports, we haven't been able to get a good sap run going this year.
Yeah,
very unusual.
Very unusual. I'd have to talk to those guys to know if this has happened in the past, I'm sure, for part-time, but not the whole season.
That's right. Yeah, the persistence of this pattern we're in has really been quite striking. It's been day after day after day. You know, International Falls, our ice box of the north up there along the Canadian border, they had never had a 70-degree temperature reading in the month of March in their weather history, and they've already had five this month.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. We're speaking with Dr. Mark Seeley. He's an extension climatologist and professor in the Department of Soil, Water, and Climate at the University of Minnesota. One thing that's kind of struck me these last few years, it seems like when it rains, it really rains. Is there a relationship between those, our higher temps that we're seeing, and how moisture is affected?
Yes, absolutely. One of the reasons our minimum temperatures have been going up, Buck, is because our dew points have been going up. The amount of water vapor in our atmosphere has been going up. And we've seen this play out in a variety of ways. For example, there at Grand Marais, I noticed from your precipitation record that all of your daily rainfall amounts of 3.5 inches or greater in one day have occurred since 1996. You cannot go back deeper in the record at Grand Marais and find a level of precipitation intensity over 3.5 inches. It's only in the modern era that you've had these hellacious amounts, like that June precipitation of nearly 4.8 inches you got back in 2008. So there is a trend going on that suggests that convective thunderstorm-like rainfall is getting more intense.
You know, you mentioned dew point, and it's something that I hadn't paid much attention to until I think last summer, and I was running a trail race down by Duluth, and it was 80 degrees, and the dew point was in the mid-70s, was about as uncomfortable as I've ever been trying to exercise. I never experienced anything like that before.
Yeah, in fact, what we talk about a lot in the climate group, it's only been in recent decades that we've seen dew points as high as 80 degrees in Minnesota. If we're and for listeners, I might characterize that, you know, when our dew points get up in the high 70s to low 80s, that's the equivalent of the air that's over Cancun, Mexico, for crying out loud. I mean, that's not air we're used to having way this far north in Minnesota. And yet here we are having air masses that are that moist or that laden with water vapor. And of course, then that makes the temperature feel much, much more oppressive. And we've had heat index values in Minnesota now as high as 134 degrees.
What is this, just for our listeners, what is the difference between when we're talking about humidity and dew point?
Well, humidity is a relative measurement in the sense that most of the time it's expressed as relative humidity. So when we say the humidity outside is 70%, it means that the water vapor content of the air is 70% of its capacity given its current temperature condition. When we talk about dew point, we're really almost talking about the absolute quantity of water vapor molecules in the air. And dew point is the temperature at which all of that water vapor would condense out. And in other words, there would be 100% saturation and it would condense out. And so the higher the dew point, more directly the larger number of water vapor molecules you have in the atmosphere around you. And I would remind your listeners that water vapor is the Earth's ultimate greenhouse gas. It retains the long-wave radiation being emitted from the Earth's surface. And that's why it feels so much warmer, or you sweat so much more in the summer when the dew points are higher.
I can attest to that firsthand after last summer's race. One other aspect of the more dramatic rains and weather events we're getting, it seems to be on the practical side. It gets harder for people to plan for runoffs and city sewers and things of that
nature. Yeah, we've had a lot in recent decades. Buck, we've had a lot of individual communities that have gone back and retrofitted their storm sewer runoff systems for higher capacity because they're finding that to protect the properties and, for that matter, the general landscape in the area, they need to be able to discharge all the surplus water from these intense rainfalls more effectively. So if they had formerly designed their storm sewer runoff system for, say, a maximum rainfall intensity of, say, a 6-inch rain, they're going back and retrofitting for a maximum intensity of maybe 8 or 9 or 10-inch rain.
I know we talk about, we hear about, 100-year weather events, and it seems like they're happening every 3 years.
Yes, I agree. In fact, our analysis of the frequency of these events clearly shows that there's been an increase in frequency. There's no questions about it. And we see that all over the state. And that's perhaps one of the more disconcerting changes in our climate from the standpoint of trying to manage that, because after all, there are limits to the amount of water we can manage. For example, down in the southeastern part of the state, in Holka, which is not far from the La Crosse area, they got a 17-inch rainfall back in August of 2007. And really, there's no landscape and there's no managed landscape in the state of Minnesota that can withstand a 17-inch rainfall without considerable damage.
Yeah, that just sounds incredible.
I
can't even imagine that much water all at once.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, as a meteorologist and in the short term, you've described that before. How does this affect? It must be a lot more complicated to predict weather.
Well, it is. In fact, in your area, you happen to live in an area of the state where, you know, perhaps the most challenging aspect of the weather to forecast is the snowfall, the snowfall rate and the snow accumulation. In fact, if you ask anybody in the weather business, the one thing a forecaster does not want to be evaluated for job performance on is he or she's snowfall forecast, because those are extremely tricky and magnified even more so in your area because of the relative effect of the lake on the one side and the relative effect of the elevation change on the other side. So it really is quite tricky. There is no such thing as a simple forecast in our region of the country. All forecasts in our region of the country are pretty darn challenging.
Dr. Seeley, you spend a lot of time talking to different groups, talking to people on the radio, in your job. You travel to all 87 counties with the Extension Service. What is your what are you seeing as far as people's reaction to this and the thoughts that maybe we can do something about climate change and things to do?
Well, I'm seeing real mixed signals depending on what type of a community I'm speaking to. It's become so politicized and it's become a controversial issue, partly because of certain popular culture aspects. I mean, there are, after all, personalities that speak on this issue that people inherently don't like. I mean, they don't like the person, maybe. I mean, there are some people that don't like the message, but quite frankly, there are also some people that don't like the messenger. Mm-hmm. But the essential message is that having studied Minnesota's climate now for 35 years and all the measurements that we make of it, all of us are absolutely convinced that it is changing, and it is changing in significant ways, and we're going to have to figure out how we want to adapt to it so that we best manage our resources and our communities in ways that we preserve what we like and that future generations can enjoy the same Minnesota that we've all enjoyed. And so there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that argument. Now, sometimes there's argument about how we might mitigate what's happening, and that gets into larger areas of uncertainty in terms of our scientific understanding. But there's no question at all that our climate is changing. That's fundamentally my message as an educator. And when I talk that, some people just don't want to deal with that because they have so much other stress going on in their lives that they have to cope with. They just as soon not have to cope with that issue. You know what I mean?
Definitely. You know, it's, and especially since things are happening so fast.
Yeah.
I know some folks out there say, well, gee, you know, there's nothing we can do. And that's just another aspect of it is still putting that hope message out there that if we can affect it negatively, maybe we can affect it positively.
Yeah, I think there are things we can do. I mean, certainly we have some very good citizens. For example, one group that I think are unsung heroes in our Minnesota culture, Buck, are the members of the Minnesota Floodplain Managers Association. Because watershed by watershed, they have been working on ways to best manage flood flows from our very smallest of watersheds to our very largest of watersheds, so that we minimize the damage to the landscape and that we minimize the threat to individual and families when we do have floods. And over the years, those people have done some very, very good work in terms of mitigating flood threats. There's also the healthcare industry. Our public healthcare officials in this state, in my view, have planned for example, higher patient loads for molds and allergens, because they see that as our temperatures rise, we have longer mold and allergen seasons, and they need to gear up to be able to treat the increased patient loads that they get from such things. So I'm thinking that if we really studied this more, you're quite right, we would come up with a pretty lengthy list of positive response to what's been going on with our climate in terms of finding ways to adjust.
We've been speaking with Dr. Mark Seely. He's the Extension Climatologist and professor in the Department of Soil, Water, and Climate at the University of Minnesota. You can hear him quite regularly on public radio, also the author of Minnesota Weather Almanac. Dr. Seely, I understand that you also really enjoy biking, and Bob and I would both like to extend an invitation when you're in Grand Marais to look us up. We'd love to get on that bike with you.
Yes, I have had the pleasure of biking a little bit along the Highway 61 biking trails up there, and it's magnificent biking. I thoroughly enjoy it. That's one of my very favorite things to do, so I will definitely keep that in mind.
Oh, that would be great. You know, I know you have another engagement, and I want to thank you so much for giving us your time, and it's always interesting, always fun to listen.
Well, thanks, Buck. And for listeners who might want to read more about climate change in northern Minnesota, I might just add that Voyager Skies, our new book about northern Minnesota and the types of climate changes going on up there, is available in most bookstores, and Voyager Skies has a chapter devoted to how some of these changes are being measured. So I would encourage people to consider that as well.
Is there a particular website also they should go to?
Well, they could look at aftonpress.com. That's the publisher, A-F-T-O-N, aftonpress.com. Or I was also aware that it was being carried in the Split Rock Lighthouse bookstore. There may be other bookstores along the North Shore there that are carrying that book as well.
Great. Well, we'll check around. Once again, thank you so much, Dr. Seely.
Okay, it's a pleasure, Buck. Take care.